You're listening to Around Comics, episode 113, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And normally, Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. But this week, we are coming to you from Challenger's Comics and Conversation.
Making a tour of Western Avenue as we work south.
We're just going to keep going down. Is there another on South Side? Is there a comic shop on Western?
It's a little tough.
Amazing Fantasy?
Is there?
I don't know.
Way down there. So
it sounds like Sal said that while reading a magazine.
I know. He looks so engaged here. But the reason that we're at Challengers, if you listened to last week's episode, which if you haven't, I would definitely suggest that you go back and listen to our interview with James Robinson. It was a really fun conversation. He was here for a signing, and the fine folks at Challengers were kind enough to let us drop in and steal him away for an hour or so. And we have J-Rob, as we call him now.
Jimmy.
One of the owners of Challengers is going to be sitting in on our panel tonight. So I'll go ahead and get everyone introduced. First of all, I'm Christopher Niesman. I'm your host. I'm joined by Mr. Tom Caters.
Hey, what's up? Hello.
Hello.
It's really radio wisdom. I didn't realize we were going to record another one.
You just thought it was the James Robinson that was it?
Yeah, I was... Yeah.
You're ready to go. You're ready to bolt.
I had the limo waiting.
You put everything into the James Robinson interview.
I got nothing.
110%. It's all done.
I always give 110%.
Well, next
is reading a magazine.
Yeah.
I guess.
Am I going to have to take the magazine away?
I'm doing research.
Mr. Brian Salazar,
hello.
How you doing?
I'm full of enthusiasm. I will make up for Tom's complete lack of enthusiasm.
And our guest this week, Dal from Challengers. Dal, how you doing?
Good. I'm just glad to, I guess, bring the A game since you guys are so
completely we're tired.
I'm James Robinson, but I'm trying.
He wore us out.
Do something.
That was a big score for you guys to get James Robinson for a signing here. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we're very happy to have him. I mean, he's a phenomenal talent and doing some great stuff at DC right now.
Yeah, and you guys. We'll talk about Challengers. Here, as we get started, and then I guess I should mention In Stock. So it's the plug start of the show. This episode of Around Comics is brought
we
to you by
in between plugs.
this episode is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. We're waiting for the trade. Has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. Great discounted prices. Remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free.
How decadent. So easy.
Free shipping.
Yeah. All right, Rome fell because you can order books easy. Yeah. That's how Rome fell, you know.
So now that we've talked about the virtual comic book shop, we'll talk about a traditional brick and mortar. Dal, you guys opened up here in 2008, right?
Yeah, about 8 months ago. I think we opened up at the beginning of April.
And it is an absolutely gorgeous comic book shop.
No,
you guys have done an amazing job of setting this up. I've told folks, and we have a lot of love for Dark Tower,
sure.
Up north. But splitting the love between you guys now, this is how I wish a lot of comic book stores were set up. And maybe describe to people the store and what your guys'
square footage,
the voltage,
tax returns,
all
that stuff. But
how you guys set up the store and why you set it up and kind of who you're trying to bring into the store.
Sure. Well, the store started by myself and Patrick Brower. We'd both worked in comics and then Chicago comics retail specifically for over 15 years each. So a lot of the ideas that we're bringing to Challengers were stuff that we just kind of assumed was the best way to run a comic store through trial and error of all the years of seeing what works, what doesn't, what people want to see, what they don't want to see. So for us, the basic thing is just really emphasizing the comics. I mean, we have bookshelves and bookshelves full of
comics. It's a novel concept.
You know, we thought it was time maybe to de-emphasize the magic cards and the action figures, maybe re-emphasize the comic books. They still make them, so maybe we should try and sell a few. it's that sort of stuff. And on top of that, we're huge fans of comics. I mean, we're always... There's people that we've talked to in the comics industry that, to them, reading comics is something they used to do, and they don't really kind of care for it anymore. They're into it, but they just don't have the time. But for us, we still read comics every single day. We still keep up on the new week's books. We're excited to see what's coming out next. So a lot of the way we design the store is just, you know, make it easier for people to be as into comics as we are.
Sure. And you guys, you know, great rows of all of the new releases and single issues from mainstream Marvel and DC and independent, but a great selection of trade paperbacks.
Manga.
Yeah.
Sorry, derisively, of course.
Yeah. They've got that on the short shelves in the back.
I was sort of, out of touch with walking in the store and seeing, like, big signs showing me where the different kinds of books were. I was just so not used to seeing that sort of thing. It was sort of disorientating.
There's a sign telling me that this is where DC Comics are.
Yeah, like, wait, what?
That's something that, again, through the years, I think it's easy when you go to comic stores all the time or work in a comic store, it's easy to sort of forget that for not everyone, the idea of who publishes Batman or where Marvel is, those sort of things, you do need to kind of say, yeah, here's the Marvel comics, here are the DC graphic novels, here are the Vertigo graphic novels, mm-hmm. and stuff. You have to make it as easy for everyone as if they walked into a comic store for the first time, because for us, at least, every day we meet new people. Every day there's someone who's not been to a comic store in 20 years or has never been to a comic store, is looking for one book specifically. And, you know, well, obviously, like most retail joints, we'll talk to people and we'll say, hey, what are you looking for? But for some people, they just want to be able to find the book they're looking for without sure. having to ask somebody or having to crack some code.
Well, you guys, one of the things that I love about the store is the location. You guys are like half a block off of the Blue Line stop on sure. Western in Milwaukee. So foot traffic is obviously or hopefully not a problem for you guys.
Right, yeah. I mean, we're right next to the Blue Line stop. We've got a bus stop right outside. We see a lot of foot traffic, you know, every morning for commuters and every night for the same commuters sometimes. But yeah, it's a really nice part of town. It's kind of sandwiched between, you know, residential and heavy business. So there's a nice mix of families on the weekends and commuters during the week.
Great. Well, for folks that come into Chicago that want to visit a comic book store that, very easily accessible, has just about anything that you can imagine that's in print. How do folks find Challengers Comics in Conversation?
We've got our website at challengerscomics.com. So that'll have your standard Google Maps and links and street address. But we're located at 1845 Northwestern Avenue. That's near Western Avenue in Milwaukee, just south of Milwaukee in the Blue Line stop. And we're on the east side of the street. And we're ground level.
They have windows a store. That you can see in.
Yep.
There's a few doors. Lights are on sometimes.
And you'll see the lights. It is incredibly brightly lit sure. in here. So
they have actual windows you can look out of or into.
Yeah. We try not to put 8,000 posters from 1998 advertising
Liefeld Captain America posters.
Yeah, I'm not going to name names, but before we opened the store, we were kind of scouting out stores in the city, and there was a store we stopped by. And they had the worst sun-faded, like, Valiant Birthquake posters, which the idea that anyone had those at all was, like, amazing, but it literally looked like they had been up since that event happened, and it was
I'm sure they had been. Yeah.
It was hilarious and depressing at the exact same time. It was pretty great.
Yeah. Well, I've told people if a third of the comic book shops in the country were set up like Challengers, there we wouldn't be worried about a diminishing market.
It's an embarrassment of riches in Chicago.
It is.
When I hear people talk about, like, the nearest comic book shop is 20 miles away and I have to get in my car.
In a strip mall behind a Walmart. Yeah,
they punch me when I walk in the door.
Yeah.
In Chicago, I live pretty close to here, and this isn't even like the closest comic book shop to my house, which is really weird.
Oh, yeah, G-Mart's right around the corner from you.
So it's like a weird, we're very lucky. If you love comics, move to a big city and you won't have a problem finding store. Yeah.
And Chicago really, we talk about it all the time. Chicago's a great comics town.
It really is.
It's good stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, let's actually talk about some comics.
What?
And
I guess.
Sal, do you want to go ahead and jump into the best of?
Sure.
This is where we read from Wizard and we make fun of it.
No, well, yeah.
Free content, don't mind if we do.
The latest issue of Wizard, they have their sort of best of the year stuff, and I just thought it would be kind of interesting to go over their list and see what we think of their best ofs and maybe give some of our best ofs.
Yeah. And I'm going to preface this with Amazon and I believe Publishers Weekly have come out with their best of like graphic novel lists, and I don't know if I agreed with theirs either. So,
I mean, you know, honestly, I had read this previously. I don't think it's. I mean, I don't think this is a terrible list of. I don't. I think people may be a little surprised at it, considering how much, you know, people just want to pigeonhole Wizard into a certain
Wizard
thing. I think I think it'll be kind of interesting what we think compared to what they think. So
let's get to the magazine content.
Best book of the year, they picked Action Comics. And they said, after 70 years, even a Man of Steel eventually begins to tarnish. But when writer Geoff Johns finally got his long-time wish and flew onto the Superman writing scene with Action Comics, he not only lifted the age-old hero up and away, he turned rusted steel into solid gold. So
I have really enjoyed
Action Comics.
Is that solid gold, though? Really?
Best book of the year? I don't know. What do you guys?
Let's not read directly out of Wizard.
No, don't read the. Well, I didn't read the whole thing. It was just a
little weird.
I heard quotation marks in that.
Just quotation marks by Kevin Mahadio. is the writer of that particular.
I liked Action.
Piece.
What was the best book I read this year?
Best book of the year.
You know what I read yesterday that I really like, and I've really liked the book the whole way. And I don't think a lot of people read. I love Young Liars by David Lapp. Even though there's a lot of people, absolutely guarantee. A couple of issues ago, when it was all a dream sequence, that some people were like, "Fuck this!" God,
that's the most amazing issue, though.
Yeah, oh, with all the spider. If you haven't read it. Pick up the first trade, must be out by now.
24th, I think it comes out.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't come out because I've been waiting for it.
It's a very interesting story. It's very sad, I guess, but also weirdly funny, but extremely...
It feels like the kind of book that a guy would make in his 20s, so the idea that, you know, Dave Lapham, after all his time, is doing like the most energetic work of his career and doing just the most... fun, violent, sexy.
It's very violent, comic. Yeah. It's everyone's an asshole.
Totally.
I read Stray Bullets for the first time this year.
Cool.
And what a fantastic series. So I'm kind of bookending. I'm reading his work and what he's doing now.
That popped in my head when I thought of something I read this year that...
Well, that Young Liars issue, the dream sequence one, is straight out of the Amy Race Car kind of handbook. It's the sort of... It's a story a character in the story is telling.
Yeah.
That sort of weird, reflexive storytelling.
And it's really... I saw a lot of people react like, I don't understand what's going on. I'm like, it's a dream. It's a dream. And eventually, it's sort of weirdly explained away. But the funny part is that the events in the dream aren't necessarily all that separated from how weird the actual reality of the book is. Sure. Like, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that's where the story was going to go. So, that's a book I really liked this year that I just keep going back to and enjoying it more and more.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll come back to some of our best ofs.
I had
okay.
I was going to say, and I don't know that necessarily it's the best book of the year, but I think one of the best books of the year is Amazing Spider-Man. I think this year, after the whole One More Day thing and that debacle for them to sort of regroup Spider-Man into a book that I've really enjoyed this year so far.
Mark Waid and Marcos Martin have made me into a Spider-Man fan.
Well, I just think the fact that, because it was such an uproar about, you know, the whole One More Day thing and doing what they wanted to do with that character to get him to a place where they wanted him, and then putting out the last year's worth of what I think are pretty quality, just fun superhero Spider-Man issues. I gotta give Quesada and them credit for that.
Yeah.
For, you know, taking all the heat on One More Day to take a character and put them where they thought would best serve. And I think I think it's one of the better books coming out of Marvel these days.
And, I mean, the fact that you've got Zeb Wells and Chris Pachala doing a three-issue Amazing Spider-Man story, I want to give somebody a medal for that. I
sure,
mean,
it was so fantastic. I'm looking forward to Roger Stern and well, the
Lee, Weeks.
Two, Lee Weeks coming, you know, on that. And I just think it's been, I mean, you know, it's there's nothing deep there. It's just sort of, you know, kind of Silver Age-ish Spider-Man issues, but I think it's been pretty solid art wise and fun to read. So
it's been a good year for comics.
I'll give it something.
I wouldn't disagree with. I've really enjoyed action comics a lot. Though I think part of it is they spent a lot of time getting Superman just to a place where he wasn't really
right
boring. You know, like they had to. I think it's a reclamation almost of like.
I think the next year of action and the Superman stuff is going to be better than maybe this past year's.
Not that I didn't like it, but
I
like Superman, but to be honest, it's kind of boring. A lot of really boring, like pedestrian Superman stories that there's not like there's nothing to it. Where Superman's just kind of like, you know, flits around. He meets some new foe who's going to be around for 3 weeks. You know, shoots him with a red, you know, red beam, and then you never see that character ever again. Or every time a writer, I forget where it was, you know, where I heard this, where someone was talking about, and this is totally from someplace else, like an interview or something, where someone was talking about why they like the Geoff Johns Superman is because when everyone else gets to write Superman, they always approach it like, I'm going to put my stamp on Superman. This is going to be my Superman. So I'm going to introduce a mullet, or he's electric, or, you know, but it was like the good thing about the Geoff Johns one, it just kind of felt like it was just Superman, you know, like he just wrote Superman.
He's going to strip it down to what the character should be.
Wasn't like I have to introduce something Superman, but he surfs. Or like,
you know, I think it's funny you're saying this because I'm sure in 2 months it's going to be like electric mullet Superman.
Yeah, electric mullet Superman will be back.
Apparently he's going to be off planet for a while. That means
like tentacle Superman.
Off Earth.
Finally.
All right, the next
tentacle porn.
What's Superman. Their next
category?
Next category?
Is best event. And they're best event. Which
what
is
a weird.
Sort of,
what, so you had
sort
a choice of
oxymoron.
Like two? Did you?
Yeah.
But their best event was Secret Invasion.
Oh, Jesus.
Man. God.
Well, when you only have like three things,
can you pick the one that isn't over yet? I mean, is that even a viable choice? Or is that even in the running?
I don't know.
I think it's funny to have a topic like best.
Well, what
event.
Were the best events of 2000?
What were
well,
the,
what
events?
The events of 2008?
World War Hulk, I guess.
Sinestro Corps.
Sinestro Corps War was the best event for any event book out there.
But I don't know if they mark. See, that's the weird thing is whether or not they market.
What
it.
What is an event?
Yeah, like what did they market as? Sinestro Corps was fun, but I wouldn't say that DC pushed it as being like until like halfway through when
which
they
is great, which is why I love New Krypton and Sinestro Corps is that there are many events within families of books, and I like that. It's
if it generates out of something, like if the Wonder Woman Rise of the Olympian stuff becomes an event within Wonder Woman and like two other books, that's awesome, and it feels like it comes from someplace. But when it's just some dictated. The Skrull show up and everybody fights. Like it doesn't feel like it comes from anything besides just a writer saying this would sell a bunch of books for me.
Yeah. Sure.
So we all agree, Secret Invasion, right?
Secret
Invasion. We all agree with
by a country mile.
I can't give Secret Invasion best anything. Quite honestly,
I think best events are weird.
I think it's the best book that came out with Invasion in the title.
I do have a small sidebar here in this same page of best satire, which just seems odd.
Is it someone making fun of Secret Invasion?
No, it's just another book called, which was a really good book called Screamland. It came out through.
Yeah,
Image.
You had talked about that.
Yeah, it was a really fun book about like the Universal Monsters.
Oh, yeah.
Today, coming back, like these has been actors that are brought back for like one last horror movie. It was really good. I think the trade just came out pretty recently.
Screamland?
Yeah, I think it just came out.
I remember you talking about that, and I really wanted to read it. It was a good year for Image to put out a lot of.
Yeah,
Image had.
Yeah.
Image had a really good year.
A ton of stuff.
Oh, so, speaking of Universal era monsters, I love the Creature Commandos coming back in action. I thought that was awesome.
The Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula,
so
G.I. Robot.
Yeah.
Medusa. Not quite Universal monsters.
Creature Commandos.
They were made in World War.
I hate saying this. I don't really know them from anything. Like, I seem to recall a DC redo of that that came out a few years ago, which is different.
In the '80s, I believe JM Day Mateus. It was like a couple issues. It was like a World War II squad of people that got mutated into like a Wolfman, a Frankenstein, and a vampire.
Okay.
And then it was for a couple of issues. And then in the '90s, they had like a weird, like half-assed relaunch where it like existed, but it kind of didn't interact with anything else, and no one knew what to do with it because the concept is kind of
strange.
Yes.
So leave it to Jeff Johns. fucking Creature Commandos, motherfucker. Deal with it.
Of course, Brainiac.
You're gonna love him.
Don't cry. It's a Wolfman. Right. Put a vampire in a Superman book. Chris Claremont was clapping somewhere. He was like, finally, someone has a vampire. Finally, someone decided to introduce vampires into it.
I think John's just going, what can I do to piss fanboys off? There's got to be something I can do. I know I'm a golden boy. There's got to be Creature Commandos. That'll do it.
And, a lot of people always joke about Chris Claremont's really talky dialogue. But for me, the quintessential Chris Claremont thing is whenever he introduces a vampire into a story. When he wrote Justice League, vampire. With Byrne, when Byrne drew it, which is a really bad Justice League story. Or the X-Men. Dracula. Fuck it.
They were Marvel guys. Best writer, 2008, Jason Aaron.
Huh.
Nice. Way to go, Jace.
I can't complain about that pick because I think he's phenomenal. I will buy anything he writes at this point. Anything he does, I will buy. He is
Sculpt is awesome.
Sculpt is phenomenal. I could give two shits about Wolverine, but he's going to be writing a Wolverine book. I'm going to buy it just because it's him.
Yeah. That Punisher Christmas story was awesome. Extremely twisted. Yeah,
very good.
Like, really, like, at the end where I was like, oh, no, he's not going to... Anytime you have characters machine-gunning babies in Maternity War... the one thing I've been looking for.
The House of Ideas finally getting it into play.
I mean, bro, has he...
Go for it.
I mean, he's one of the guys that, he's hitting close to 1,000. I don't know if he's written anything that is poor.
Sculpt, the Black Panther issues that he did, three of those. Some Wolverine stuff that he did.
Some fun Hellblazer stuff.
That was really good. The Ghost Rider stuff that he's done. He just, for some, whatever reason, he's able to add a certain weight to books that I really appreciate.
He kind of gets to the marrow of the characters.
I think you could probably... I mean, if you wanted to pick apart his stuff, you could probably say it's a bit too... there's a bit too...
Leans on the gritty.
Yeah, Leans on the Gritty is maybe a bit too macho to it, what I mean? But I just think he's a really good writer.
You need to get some ladies in there, Jason.
Gotta get some sensitive moments.
A late addition that... just the last couple of things he's worked on that I would almost think is just in the last couple months have come out that really impressed me is both for whatever reason Joe Kelly's stuff with Four Eyes and I Kill Giants, like last couple of things. Fantastic. I'm just like, those are really well written, just sort of like maybe I hadn't been paying attention to what Joe Kelly had been doing for a little while, but it just seems like those two things kind of came out.
For whatever reason, those last two things were just...
And his Amazing Spider-Man two-parter, the Hammerhead stuff was pretty killer.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, yeah, Joe Kelly's around. And the last issue of I Kill Giants made me tear up on the train.
on the train?
Yeah, I was sitting on the train and someone looked at me and I was just like, got something in my eye.
She's killing giants.
Shut up!
Leave me alone.
She's killing giants!
Best single issue, Why the Last Man, number 60, the end of the Why the Last Man.
Whatever.
I don't know. I don't know what I would pick for best single issue, but
I'd pick that. Jason Aaron's Joker's Asylum Penguin issue was absolutely awesome.
It made me fall in love with the Penguin, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to say it other than that. Like, I'd never been a
Don't never worry, you can character. Say it however you feel.
I love him so much.
Wasn't that a good issue?
I don't know. It was, again, it's a character that I'd never had any affection for. I'd never cared about the Penguin or wanted to, like, he was an interesting villain on the cartoon, I guess. I
mean, and in, like, cool. 10 pages, you, like,
yeah, you
really
get,
cared
you get
about
his
him.
Motivation. You understand his dilemma. I mean, it, and I'm a sucker for Jason Pearson stuff, so that's why I gave it a shot. And it just blew me away. Like, it was the
Pearson's
the best book of the week. Easy,
you hated him, kind of understood him and was sympathetic for him, and by the end of it, you hated him again, but you looked at the character in a very different way.
It trafficked in that kind of Soprano storytelling of we're not asking you to like the character, but we're asking you to understand what he's doing, what he's doing.
Yeah.
So it absolutely, like, it completely filled that void.
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic issue.
Still haven't read it.
I really like the Jimmy Olsen one shot that I thought was a lot of fun. Just to see someone take Jimmy Olsen and do something with him, you know, like, I think I don't know if a lot of people know what to do with Jimmy Olsen besides just have him, like, show up,
be around,
like, for 30 seconds in an issue, like,
to,
what do you do with Jimmy,
the exposition or the coffee at the same time, I guess,
or like to actually have Jimmy Olsen, like, talk or do anything besides be like, what kind of coffee you want,
right? Mm-hmm. Don't call me chief,
okay. Don't call me chief, you know,
that's
so
we get every issue.
So both that, but the Penguin one also stands out to me as those being, but I think both of those are very unique, and in that they both stood out because they're characters that people are familiar with, mm-hmm. that kind of get shown in a really different light than you're probably used to seeing them. Like, I can't remember the last time I gave two shits about the Penguin. Sure. You know, it's like, he's just a crime boss. You know, I'm like, whatever. He's kind of neutered a little bit over there.
Another kind of single issue that came out was in the Superman Confidential of the Geoff Johns Toyman. Issue came out this was that two issues
that was one issue
it was just one
was
action
it one in action okay
Toyman
great single issue that made a pretty, you know, irrelevant villain it's kind of like a definitive Toyman story now.
A single issue I haven't read yet though that I looked at last week and I kind of want to buy is that the Jerome Opeña drawn Wolverine one shot.
Oh, sure.
That came out. Did you take a look at that?
It no.
It's really? Pretty. Yeah,
Opeña's awesome.
It's really pretty.
A couple.
He's going to do a nice Punisher
detective. It wasn't the last issue that came out. The one that came out before that, the last one that Dean, I thought was really good. I don't know. I'm not really trying to.
It's hard to remember single issues.
Yeah, single issue that really.
I think it was 2008, but I'm going to toss in Patsy Walker Hellcat number one. Was I thought
I heard a lot of good things about that.
The most underrated book of the year, series, book, everything. I mean, it was, and it's doing an amazing thing that I think a lot of comics forget to do these days, which is making the entire package entertaining. The recap page is in character. The letters column is letters to Patsy Walker. She tries to help people with their problems, and it's ridiculous, and it's all tongue in cheek and over the top and gorgeously drawn. I mean, the artwork is. David LaFuente, who went on to do the Ultimate Spider-Man annual, but his work is so much sweeter on Patsy Walker.
I heard a lot of good things about that.
It's seriously super fun, and I'd highly recommend it to nearly anyone who's looking for, like, an antidote to some of the Sturm und Drang storytelling that Marvel and DC are churning out.
But I think it's fun. It's one of those, like, miniseries that kind of gets buried underneath everything else. Like,
and it's easy too. I mean, when you make it fun and tongue-in-cheek, you're almost telling people it's inessential. And I don't know how comics started to matter and not matter. But
yeah,
I mean,
like, well, that,
well, it's kind of like the Dan Slott curse. You know, sure. Dan Slott works on, you know, a book like The Thing or She-Hulk, and it's fun, it's well-written, it's just a very entertaining book. And it just, you know, where we talk about Jason Aaron having a tremendous amount of weight to what he writes, where Dan Slott on these titles, it wasn't heavy. It was very fun and light and entertaining, and it just...
Well, I always think it's really frustrating when people talk about why they don't buy something, and they say it doesn't matter to, like, the bigger... It's like, well, none of it. Like, what world are you living in that
exactly.
Like, the criteria should really be, like, is it entertaining
they're worried about who they should trust.
But and then I just from retail experience, that, like, the funny thing is that a lot of the people who will say that they're not buying something because it doesn't matter are the ones who are almost the most fatigued of the event storylines. So instead of buying a fun book that isn't related to anything that you can just enjoy on its own merits, I think people tend to tie into Secret Invasion.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, there you go.
Nova, you know, that's
Secret,
you know,
Captain Britain is super
awesome.
Fun.
Oh yeah, I love Captain Britain's been awesome.
Marvel has recaptured their cosmic characters in the last year, and I think that is incredibly overlooked by a lot of people. Marvel's Cosmic is back, and it's really a load of fun.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm excited about something like War of the Kings, which is just, it, by all rights, shouldn't be that interesting. That stuff usually tends to become too cosmic and too convoluted, and it's just, there's such a great through line of what's been going on in the X-Men books and what's been going on with the Inhumans and then what's going on in the cosmic stuff that it feels like a story that would naturally develop. Like, of course this would happen next.
I'm just excited, you know, Rocket Raccoon is back.
There you go.
Yeah, anytime you can put Rocket Raccoon there, into a story.
A giant machine gun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what...
Demolition's expert.
That's the best part of comics, you know?
Yeah, raccoon running around.
Blowing shit up.
Not a raccoon sitting at a table.
No.
Talking.
Being told about Dark Reign.
All right, best artist, Lenil Yu.
Lenil Yu.
Wow. Not this year.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't consider his stuff this year... as good as his previous stuff.
Kind of like some of us. The one thing I don't like about Lenil Yu, and this is, I don't want it to turn into like an anti-Secret Invasion thing. I've noticed this about his stuff.
Feel free.
I've noticed about he doesn't draw action scenes in a way that makes sense. Like, I remember a very specific issue of New Avengers that I read where they were all on a plane and the plane was going to crash. And there's like four panels in a row. And people jumped out of the plane, and I could not for the life of me figure out how the fuck they got out of that plane with the way they're saying. I was like, how did this happen? And I was like, I couldn't make sense of it. I think, there's other people, I think, too, in the Green Lantern books, I think this happens a lot, where you get a lot of pressure to put a ton of characters into something.
Right.
And you look at it, and it's like, it's a poster. It's not like a story sequence. It's just like, like it happened in, happened in Secret Invasion, you know,
all over the place.
Yeah, there's like two page spreads of just people standing like fighting. It's like, well, it's not really a story, you know. And it happens a little, it happens in Green Lantern, it happened in there was a, before I dropped Mighty Avengers, there was one issue where there was three straight like two panel two page
Doom stuff.
Yeah, where it was just like, oh, well, okay, I mean,
that's not really, I thought was like the least offensive of it, because I think Mark Bagley has a real good grasp on how to do those things where you're never losing who the important character is, what the important thing in the fight
is. But it was, even though he's really good at it, and like three pages in a row of it, I thought was slightly like,
I just feel like that's the typical, like, and Bendis does it all over the place in Secret Invasion, that sort of lazy storytelling of like, I'm going to show you how important this fight is, but
everyone showed up
in like 15 seconds. Yeah, like, and then everyone stands around like they're waiting for a bus at the end while someone else solves the problem.
But that's all different. I think it might be just, maybe I haven't seen Lenil Yu on the right project for him.
Well,
you know, I don't think he's bad.
Who have been your favorite artist this year?
Oh man, I'll say Gary Frank. I'll throw him out there.
Gary Frank's been great. On
Gary Frank's been
some of
good.
The best of his career.
Yeah,
Marcos Martin has blown me away this year with his
stuff. Guy who did Ghost Rider when Aaron Frist took over, Bashi.
Oh, Robin Bashi.
Yeah, he was awesome, and he did the Punisher one shot.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome. There's an Italian artist, I can't think of his name now. He did some Hellblazer stuff this year. God, I wish I could think of his name. He only did like three or four issues.
It's not Riccardo Bracelli, is it? No. The dude from Northlanders, I think?
No, a different artist.
Whoever did I Kill Giants, very different style.
Well,
from,
you know, Sean Murphy back in doing stuff in comics, and did Jason Aaron's run on Hellblazer, so it's great to see Sean Murphy back.
I wish I could remember that.
Jerome Opeña is so good.
Awesome.
And for a completely different flavor, Phonogram Volume 2, Issue 1 came out last week, and it's great to see Jamie McKelvey, who's actually doing some stuff for Cable.
Yeah, you know? People are gonna hate it though.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, Jamie is a guy that is. I mean, his work is different than anybody else that's doing comics right now.
Who's the Iron Fist artist?
Oh, the Trevor Foreman, the new one.
Aja,
David Aja.
David Aja did the original
series. He was blowing me away on that. Stuff. Man, that stuff was really good.
Well, I mean, like the half of the book that he did. Not to knock on him.
Oh, yeah. But
well, I mean, like the fact there's so many.
They did a lot of the fill-in stuff.
Yeah.
That wasn't his.
No, I'm not saying that's his fault. Yeah. I think it, but I, it was funny because I remember when people were like, oh, he's off the book. It's not going to look the same. And I was kind of like, yeah, his stuff was good. But I'm like, you know, like a lot of the more memorable stuff was
the fill-in artist.
The fill-in artist.
See, I really enjoyed his stuff on.
I mean, it was good.
But
I guess when I thought of it, I thought because maybe I just thought the flashback stories were a little more
interesting.
A little more interesting than the current stuff. I mean, that's not a rip on him. I think he did very well. I just thought it was weird because I was like, I guess he was constant, though. Yeah, I mean, he did the covers. He did those really design heavy covers. I'd love to see him do.
I do want to see more Jason Pearson stuff.
Yeah, I think he's.
He's got so much. I mean, it seems like he's come out with more stuff in the last 3 months than he has in the last 3 years.
Yeah,
I mean, that body bag thing, I'm sure he's working on it forever, but that was 60 something, like 64 pages. I mean, it was a big issue.
Yeah.
And his
stuff looks just amazing.
But, you know, as we, you know, kind of continue on year after year, we're seeing more European artists, more South American.
Foreigners stealing American jobs.
Rafael Albuquerque can steal whatever he wants from any artist he wants to.
Albuquerque's awesome.
But he's been doing Justice League, blows me away.
Didn't he do that Superman Batman 2?
The best two part of those guys.
Is he foreign? Written.
Oh, with the kids?
With the little Justice League? Those were drawn just. Oh, those were amazing.
Yeah.
Kershaw's just done some
Teen Titans year one.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, there's been some fantastic art in this year's comics. So it's once again it's great to see the art world opening up in comics.
Greg Land. Kidding.
Indie of the year, Kramer's Ergo 7.
That 105.
Which is just came out or not even out yet, I think.
It's insanely expensive.
It's like $150 or something.
They have a killer lineup for that book, though. I mean, I got to tell you.
It's a giant book.
All the anthology stuff that comes out at the end of the year, and that one's got a peerless. It's going for it.
Indie book of the year.
That's such a hard category.
That you enjoyed a lot?
Any independent book that I really took a lot? The Joe Kelly books from Image, I've been loving those.
I almost don't put Image and Dark Horse and even like IDW in independence. And I know that you probably should, but why? I don't know.
Is it only a guy that's doing it himself, self-published?
I don't know.
Because none of them are self-published.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ergo 7 is not
putting that together.
Yeah, it's not self-published.
Yeah.
I mean, Image isn't paying anybody to do that book.
No.
Joe Kelly's doing that, and they're paying to print it. So it's an independent book. I don't know.
I don't know.
When you hear independent, you're thinking small press.
I'm thinking like top shelf Fanagraphics. Kitchen sink, one drawn in San quarterly. Diego,
Artist Alley is what you're thinking.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bicycles and glasses.
Yeah, it's different.
I think you're ridiculous.
Okay, then Fear Agent is the best independent book going out.
Yeah, why not?
To you?
Yeah.
Well, listen, in any business environment where two companies make up, I don't know, 95%,
is it only 95% this month?
Like, the difference between Image and, you know, like...
Independent book of the year was Lock and Key. Was that an indie book?
Damn, you stole mine.
Thief. First off, I introduced you to that book. You won't even have known about it unless I happen to read it and tell you about it. So I stole shit.
Yeah, that was
Mr. I talked to Joe Hill.
I haven't talked to Joe Hill.
I emailed
Joe Hill.
You guys need to argue about this on somebody else's time.
Or podcast.
Or forever.
Have you guys read Lock and Key?
Not yet.
I haven't. I've been
waiting for like a super oversized Absolute Edition.
The hardcover's not enough for you?
That's not going to be the final.
It doesn't do it justice.
Not collectible enough.
I have talked ad nauseum about that book, but seriously, if you haven't read it and you're a horror fan, check it out.
An independent book that is not new, but that I started reading this year and is the only book that my girlfriend's ever read every single part of it and then asked for more was The Waiting Place.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, McKeever.
She's not going to get it anymore.
She's not, yeah, I said that. I told McKeever that, and he's like...
You got to get her Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, which is one of my favorite books of all time and the absolute best thing Sean McKeever has ever done and, frankly, probably will ever do. It's,
whoa,
the, it's
wow.
the most perfect book.
You this do that, Sean McKeever?
This
Sean,
was
I'm
the thing.
You out, McKeever. Wow. Prove me wrong.
I had left the first volume of Waiting Place out, and... my fiance picked it up. Yeah, yeah, in the toilet next to all the pornography, and she dug through the pornography. And
that was nice of her.
Yeah, and she read it, and then she's read like Why the Last Man and various things, but has never been like, oh, where's the next one? She's always been like, sure. Oh, okay, whatever. And she sought out the second one herself on the bookshelf and then breezed through the second. She read like the second two volumes all in one day while she was just kind of like sitting around. She's like, where's the next one? I'm like, I hate to tell you. There ain't no next
one. You can call the brother's frame, I guess.
Here, call out. Sean McKeever. Yeah. He'll tell you over the phone.
Why don't you just email Sean McKeever and ask him what happens next?
Time for some Waiting Place fan fiction to start coming.
But I hadn't read that till this year, and I really loved it, and she really liked it. And they're awesome books. I mean, being from Wisconsin definitely resonates.
Yeah.
Sort of stupid hick culture. You know.
Those things
and it's
that
funny.
Start you as a mix, teenager.
Yeah, well, being from Green Bay, it's funny because when you talk to other people from the same area and they're like, oh, Green Bay was like a big city.
To them.
But it's not.
To the Eau Claire residents.
Or like in the Upper Peninsula or like all those places. And it's really weird because it's just a really shit small town, you know. And it's like reading that book, I was like, yes, I remember how stupid people were in high school.
No offense to all of our
men. No, I mean that's a huge category, and there's so many books that come out.
Well, it's to you. What do you think? If we're not. It doesn't count.
Stop being a pussy, dude, and just
pick
one.
Yeah, just
pick
something. Something you like.
Just pick something you like.
It doesn't have to be the best.
Or the stringent example of Wizard Magazine.
It was great to see Mike Aldred come back with Madman.
Madman was
the return of Madman this year.
There you go. That's a really good one to pick.
Yeah. No one said local yet. That's kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, but that was going on like 2 years, man.
I don't know, he only
finished it this year.
It came out this year. I think. I mean,
that hardcover is nice.
Yeah,
it's real good. That hardcover is excellent. And I mean, I'd find some fault with the last issue, but the few before it that managed to come out in 2008, pretty
it was
excellent.
A good book.
Really, really obsessively done comicking.
Yeah, almost to its own detriment.
Almost.
Almost like to the first. You don't need to draw this.
There's more. Yeah.
There's a best publisher category.
I don't know. We'll get to it.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
Hero,
he's got an answer.
Best hero. Captain America is what they picked for best hero.
Is there a parenthetical, like, which Captain America? Does it matter? Is
Bucky.
It all Captain America?
It's Bucky.
Okay.
No, it's this Captain America of this year. I mean,
okay.
So, I don't know. How do you pick best hero? I'm not sure how you...
Who was the most heroic hero this year?
Also the multi-alien came back, so obviously, like, that's got to be the top of the list. Yeah,
Creature Commandos.
Creature Commandos.
It was a great year for Cap. It was a great year for Hal Jordan.
I'll give Cap credit just more on a writing sense of, like, Brubaker pulling off the fact that he killed Steve Rogers and made Bucky Captain America, and he's made it work.
Yeah.
I'll give him,
he made it work. I gotta say that Batroc stuff is making me doubt the long term viability, if there ever was one.
Dude,
Bucky as Cap. I'll say it. I'll put it out there. I'll go on record with that.
You're smacking on Batroc?
No, I think the Batroc as a character with his leaping is he's the most leaping character I can think of. I mean, absolutely. Bar
he
none.
Does leap.
But no, I just with the most recent arc, I think it just feels like the narrative energy that book had of all the Red Skull and Death of Cap stuff. You've firmly moved into the Bucky is Cap, he has his new adventures phase, and it just feels like a book I can stop reading now. It just
well, he kind of did that with Daredevil too. Daredevil,
is the Matt goes to Europe arc, absolutely.
Yeah, that's where he is. Even though I think that Daredevil is Daredevil is kind of back on an upswing now with the whole
Lady Bullseye stuff has been great.
I really like that, but I think that Cap is getting ready to hit that kind of. One arc valley, and then something will happen. And
so when Lady Batroc shows up in like
Lady
7
Batroc.
Months,
she is Deleeper. I'm Deleeper.
Best revamp, Incredible Hulk.
Revamp? Is that a real?
I guess giving him a book
before this. I mean,
he had a mini series at one point,
Hulk's couple comic of... into a Hercules comic. I guess that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a real trick.
Yeah, how about it?
They turned it from the Hulk to a
character. That's, you know, awesome.
Kind of going back to what I had mentioned a little earlier, I'd say best revamp is Marvel's Cosmic.
Okay,
Nova.
Just in general, yeah. Marvel's Cosmic, Nova, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy is a phenomenal book.
It is so much fun.
And every month, yeah. That's a great revamp. But Captain Britain is another just awesome revamp,
yeah,
or re-release or whatever you want
to
call it.
From Wisdom to now working on MI-13, Paul Cornell, really in a short amount of issues written, really seems to get comics now.
Did he not before?
He wrote,
I don't know what he wrote.
Well, there was just a lot of, it was mostly a picture at the end and a picture at the beginning and then like pages of dialogue in between.
I
don't know what he's talking about.
What the hell did he write before?
Wisdom was the first thing I had read that he did, and I liked Wisdom, but it seems like Captain Britain, MI-13, is...
You liked it, more?
It's better comics. It seems like he's, you know, kind of learned from like screenwriting to comic book writing. He seems to get the craft now a little bit more. So
to me, the biggest change between Wisdom and Captain Britain is that you understand the stakes of the story much faster than you did in Wisdom.
Wisdom, it
took a long time to sort of see where he's going and what's trying to happen here. The characterization's good, but the plot was just, it took too long to unspool.
He gets the 22-page comic now.
This, it feels like, in the first part of a 4-part story, you understand why they're doing what they're doing.
See, Dal doesn't think I'm crazy.
I don't think you're crazy.
We should have him back
for entirely different reasons.
I'm not gonna read that one. That was
that was stupid.
Best all-star comic.
Hottest female character.
Best boobs.
Villain. Best boobs. Best villain, Norman Osborn.
Guess you got told the end of Secret Invasion before.
Yeah, I think that's a lame.
No, he's the hero of Secret Invasion. You guys are reading the wrong book.
I'm gonna.
Do you guys hate Freedom?
Best villain is.
I hate our Freedom.
What's his name from Scalped?
Yes.
Red Crow?
Red Crow.
Yeah.
He's fucking villain.
I'd say Red Crow and Sinestro, and I think they're extremely similar.
Okay.
Even though they're completely different. Like,
are they different? I'm not seeing
any difference between, but they're both extreme, in weird ways, like the basis of their characters are very similar.
Well, they both believe in what they're doing is the right thing. They're trying to...
But they've horribly gotten off track.
Yes, absolutely.
The
last few issues of Scalped have with Red, you know, it's basically focused on
it's
Red.
It's almost
Crow.
Become Red Crow Red to me Crow's is more book. Interesting yeah, than yeah. Dashiell.
Holy crap, that character's fantastic. I mean, that book's great, but yeah, that he's a great
Sinestro
villain.
And Red Crow. Those are
Sinestro
my two.
Sinestro and Red Crow.
Those are my two
I can't
villains.
Argue with either one, man. Either one's better than Norman Osborn. I'll tell you that.
I'll steal from Ron at iFanboy and say corporate Red Skull.
Luskin, whatever.
Yeah. Well, just the
mid management, who has to deal with all these guys like bitching about each other, like the dude with the Dr. Faust. Like, I was just trying to tell him.
Yeah,
no, that was it's good,
middle management. Red Skull.
Red Skull.
Skull.
Super Duper Skrull. Was he a great? Which one? Like 9?
Skrulls. I'm surprised I didn't just pick Skrulls.
I guess I'll go with the Skrull then. There is a Skrull in I think issue 2 or 3 of Secret Invasion that's indelibly burned into my mind. It's a Wolverine Cyclops Skrull that is the stupidest like gag design I've ever seen for a character. Like it feels like Bendis and Lanil, you got drunk one night and said like, "What's the dumbest thing we can put in the book?" And it was a Skrull Wolverine Cyclops, and it is full like. Big fight scene. There it is. He's, you know, kicking ass, and it's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. It there's a line in comics where you go from idiotic into awesome, and then there's another line where you go right back into idiotic, and they just cross that
second
line.
Should they have added Angel's wings?
I'm sure there was in one book out there.
Because that would have made
awesome. Archangel's wings.
Metal wings.
Although on the other side of the coin, there is a Power Pack Skrull that showed up in like Mighty Avengers that I was, as a Power Pack fanboy, beside myself. I'm like, there he is. And then he gets like killed by Marvel Boy or something, probably in like one panel.
It has been nice to see Brainiac come back and be really badass.
The one thing probably my biggest disappointment will also be the fact that because of the Vertigo DC divide, we'll never see a Red Crow Sinestro
team up where like they go on a road trip. Yeah. Jason Aaron and Jeff Johns need to get together and organize a way for Red Crow. They're so similar. So similar.
Casinos, big money there.
Best, this is a weird category, best R-rated book, The Boys.
Seems like. Okay.
Is there that many other R-rated books out there?
Like the Max books, Vertigo books, I guess.
Vertigo.
Which, again, Young Liars, I guess.
I you know how what? Get the nod. There's the a lot of mainstream books that would be rated R just for the amount of blood and violence.
Well, I'll go back and say Lock and Key, because that will be an R-rated movie.
Sure.
So Lock and Key.
Do you guys like The definitely. Boys?
I don't.
I honestly think it's getting really good. I think it's generally,
I dropped it after a little while. So I was like, yeah.
There's some stuff in there. I think he had a hard time really balancing the long-term plotting he wanted to do with the fun kicks of, you know, that it's got a gerbil in him. Like, that's, you know, the fun gag that I think got a lot of people into it. But in general, it took him a while to balance those two. And I think with the I Tell You No Lie GI arc, I think that really started to feel like the strongest boys story arc today.
Might go back and try it again. I thought it was a little too heavy on the gross out gag scale and not heavy enough on the story.
His worst writing is when he just leans on that shit. I think that's his worst writing when he does that, and I have like a real love hate relationship with Garth Ennis's work, because there's stuff of his that he does that I love.
Have you read Night Witches yet?
No, I haven't yet, but
that's good. Really good.
There's stuff of his that I absolutely love, and then there's stuff of his that I absolutely hate. And The Boys is one of the books that I just don't like.
Man's got a wide field of stuff he's written. You know, read Night Witches. It's very good.
Night Witches is great. And also,
fanboyed me out of that, or I wouldn't have read it. Actually.
I know. It's
Wait, was that great. The plane?
Yeah,
the pilots, the female Russian pilots?
Yeah.
I did read that. Yes, yeah. that was really good.
Garth Ennis finished up his, 60 issue run of Punisher Max this year.
Punisher Max, I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
But The Boys, I think, is just lame. It's just like stupid. It's like Garth Ennis turned into Kevin Smith.
There is, again, like the I Tell You No Lie arc is the one that I think has the most stuff that you would like in it, because it is the least. I don't want to say sophomoric, because it's kind of the point of the book, but there's stuff in there that calls back to a lot of things he would do in like Punisher Max and even some of the stuff he was doing. I can't remember. There was another book that he kind of put that into. But yeah, I mean, in general, it is more of the history of that world, and it's more of the kind of political maneuvering. It's more of the, you know, huge mistakes superheroes have made, that kind of stuff.
I just think at some point it's like the deconstructive writing that has gotten to the point where like, there's nothing left to deconstruct except the absurd.
Sure.
You know, and it's just like, all right, let's find something else to write about or some other way. I'm just a little tired of it. You know, it's
as long as the Mature Readers Power Pack comic hasn't come out yet, I know the bottom of the barrel hasn't.
It's
still on its way. I read it on our Power Pack.
2010.
Pack Attack. Look forward to it.
Best horror writer, Joe Hill. Lock and Key. So they give Joe Hill some love.
Did you, speaking of horror, speaking of horror, this just struck me. Did you guys read BPRD War on Frogs number 2?
I have not yet.
Written by John Arcudi. Drawn by John Severin.
Yeah, there you go.
But very much a war comic mixed with horror that struck me as very different from other BPRD books, though. So beware if you're used to a certain style.
Did you read the new Hellboy issue that came out?
That was good stuff.
I was talking to
Sam. You were telling me. No, I haven't had a chance to read it.
You said
it was really good, though.
Sal and I talk about Hellboy probably a little too much sometimes. That you have what's your issue with Hellboy?
My biggest problem with it, you and I have the same issue.
I just think Hellboy is a fantastic character that Mignola can't get out of the way of and just let be Hellboy. I think he gets into this, you know, obscure, obtuse,
it's
abstract,
very esoteric.
Yeah,
at times.
Very strange. You know, Russian folklore, whatever. And he just doesn't let Hellboy be Hellboy. It's just this cool character. Well, go and do shit.
We've had this. I've talked about this before. That when you separate Hellboy from other characters, it becomes tough when he's just dealing with mythical characters and it's like dream states. Like, you need him sometimes, I think, to be around someone who's just another character in that universe.
See, I don't know. The thing that's appealing to me about Hellboy is the fact that he's like a purely reactive character. He's rarely the character that's going to go out and do something or start an adventure. Things just happen to him, and the more absurd it is that it happens to him, I think the more entertaining it is. Like, some of the most fun stuff that I remember of Hellboy is just, I think it's Wake the Devil. It's him with his rocket pack jumping out of the airplane.
Well, see, I like that stuff's great, but the problem is it's gotten to the point where he doesn't react anymore to anything. He's I think that's all he does.
But that's what I mean. Like, him, all of this stuff where it's just falls to the bottom of the ocean, has to, like, fight sea hags, you know, it lives in a ghost house. I mean, that stuff is great because he is the unflappable character. You know, he's the one who doesn't ever react, you know, hugely to something. It's always just kind of the eye roll and like, all right, I guess I got to fight this monster. Like, that's Hellboy.
The funny thing with me was that actually got me interested in reading the new series when it came out. I read the Hellboy Companion, which reminded me of how everything ties together. Yeah. Part of my problem is...
There's a Hellboy Companion?
Yeah. The part of my problem... Part of the problem why I really love the BPRD stuff, I almost enjoyed it more than the Hellboy stuff, is to me it was easier to follow from story to story to see where it was going. And for the Hellboy storyline a little bit, I got kind of lost about a year ago where I kind of lost track of like how it was all supposed to fit together. And it does when you read the companion, you're like, oh yeah, this all does fit together. So then when I read it, I picked up that Wild Hunt one because I'm like, now I remember what's going on.
But to me, I shouldn't need a companion.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a little bit of
to read a comic book.
But the universe has gotten that thick. But one of the things about the Wild Hunt that I was telling Sal about, you know, you just want to see Hellboy go out and beat people up.
That's all I need. Yeah. I don't need anything more than that.
And so,
I love the character. I think he's a cool character, and I love the fact that he's this sort of insanely weird character in insanely weird situations, but that his sort of philosophy is very simple. You know, it's like he grew up on an army base, being, you know, around a bunch of guys in 1945, you know, during World War II, and he's just has that mentality of like this, you know, 1940s sort of everyman,
man of
action. Even though he's a demon, and it's like that's what I like about that character.
The Wild Hunt was a good balance, I think, of both the fantastical like mythology elements and the more down to earth elements were both mixed extremely well in that, and I'm really looking forward to reading.
When they're walking down that staircase and they're telling them about the history of hunting these trolls, and there are all these like mounted troll heads on there, I'm just like, okay, this is a Hellboy that Sal is really.
I don't need much more than that. I'm a simple guy. Just give me Hellboy.
You didn't inherit the Slughouse.
Wasn't that
that dude just giving a shit? Oh man,
that was in our family for 300.
Yeah.
I don't know. Four or five Hellboy minis that have been done. What has Hellboy done?
Well, I mean,
not
this
much
one,
of anything. I mean, he's been sort of floating around
at the bottom of the ocean.
Not doing anything.
This one specifically, with the twist at the end, I think gives you the idea that this is a series for Hellboy that's playing at different stakes than the ones before. It's more, you know, it is about his history and it is about the things he's done, and more than that, it's about. Less of the, you know, I'm in a fairy realm and I'm fighting, you know, eternal. Mm-hmm.
It's the first time in a long time that anything has come after Hellboy with an agenda. He usually stumbles into something,
right?
With the deer head, which is sweet.
Yeah, it's a sweet deer head.
Yeah,
I just think Hellboy is a great character that gets over complicated by Mignola wanting it to be more meaningful than he needs to be.
But even bad Hellboy is good.
It's well done.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily entertaining.
Like to see, and the cool thing about reading that companion is seeing, like, when he talks about like plans that Hellboy in the BPRD will eventually sort of come back together. They're not going to be separate forever, and that
that'll be nice to see.
Yeah, and that it'll play out, which is kind of cool because you don't often see that in comics where someone is sort of now... He's sort of got the reign now where he can do that, and he can be like, I have an idea for how I want this to go, and I don't have to freak out and worry about making sure Hellboy shows up in every BPRD story.
I love the idea that the Hellboy miniseries he's done since he's left the BPRD don't have to include four pages of, like, what's Liz up to? Like, that never has to be a part of the story.
And the BPRD books are pretty awesome
they've become their own.
They don't need Hellboy to make those stories interesting. Right. So it's going to be even cooler when eventually they do collide back together again
for the big event for 2010 that'll win Wizard Awards.
Oh yeah, it'll be event of the year. It's going to be the 2010 event.
I want the Hellboy from the movies in the comics, just better stories than the movies.
Yeah. I miss Roger.
Best cover artist, Marko Djurjevic. I don't know how you say
it. Which ones did he do?
Half the Marvel comics that came
out. Ghostwriter, Daredevil, New Avengers, Thor.
All right.
Here, I'll show you pictures of his stuff.
All right, I recognize.
Yeah. Man, see,
best cover artist. I don't know.
I'll say Marco Martin. That dude always does something inventive. I'll say with
LeDrone.
Cover.
He's awesome.
Always.
LeDrone's like cover is pretty sweet.
Cliff Chang.
Okay.
Love Cliff Chang covers.
Or James Jean. I mean, how about James Jean?
The James Jean Award. Oh,
yeah, why not?
They're just going to fucking rename that the James Jean Award.
He earns it every month. I'll say it.
Those covers are amazing.
There's one he did for the Cinderella two-parter. The colors are just, it's seriously probably one of the best covers of the year. I guess maybe I'll say James Jean then. I'll go back.
David Aja's Iron Fist covers I thought were good. Very unique and very... They stuck out on the shelves, which
I can't think of any covers off the top of my head that I really fell in love with. I don't really. Yeah.
I love Cliff Chang stuff, so I've loved his covers this year.
I always love LeDrone covers.
Yeah, they're good. They're good.
I do.
Now we get into some interesting stuff here in the
movie. Oh, boy.
Best stuff. Best prop replica.
Oh, my God.
The DC Direct Superman cape for $295.
That's pretty
sure. Why not?
The most authentic super prop to date.
Can I tell you a childhood story involving a Superman cape that I owned as a kid?
Please.
When I was a kid, I owned a Superman cape that I wore for an entire summer. And everywhere, like, if I go to the dentist or I go to the doctor, I always had to wear my Superman cape. But then I became strangely fascinated with having a broken arm. Like, I really wanted...
Like you,
I had a friend who had a cast. I had a friend who had, like, a cast, and for whatever reason, I thought it was really cool.
So you wanted a cast.
So I wanted, like, to pretend like my arm was broken, so I made my parents turn my Superman cape into, like, a sling.
Whoa.
For my arm.
A super sling.
A super sling, yeah. I have...
You had some issues as a...
I was weird. My parents freaked out once when I was 3 because I was pretending to have a limp.
Jesus,
but they couldn't figure... I don't go to the dead. No, I'm not. I was too young to explain what was going on, so my parents couldn't figure out why I was limping. So they thought it was, so they brought me to the doctor, and the doctor's like, I just think he's making it up.
Yeah. Wow.
Did you just want attention, or you just like the idea of being hurt?
I don't know.
I'm not sure what it was.
It doesn't last. I don't do it now.
I was going to ask, recently?
It was like something when I was like 3-4 years old, and for whatever reason, I'm glad they didn't
make like the transition to adulthood with like a cane or like a monocle.
I'm not a hypochondriac or anything either. So,
do you often poke yourself in the eye just so you can walk around?
Do you just want to feel something? Is that what this?
Yeah, I just want to feel some. I'm a cutter. I mean, of course. I mean, obviously, that goes without saying. I read comics, but I grew out of it for whatever reason.
I had a friend once turn to me and I don't know, we were drinking one night and talking. All of a sudden, all of a sudden, he's like,
I don't like where this is.
So many stories like, start that way. Wow.
He's like,
turn to me and said,
I often wonder what it would feel like to be shot.
Oh, that's not a good
question. And I'm just like, what?
If you get that on tape, that absolves you of everything you'd conceivably have trouble with.
I don't want to die or anything. I just think it would be interesting to know what it would be like to be shot or stabbed.
Because that's the tough part, is the wondering, you know what I mean?
Wondering.
Yeah. You're sitting there just like, oh my God.
That's why so many gunshot wound victims are relieved, like, finally, you know?
Finally, I've been shot.
Always the bridesman.
Yeah, exactly.
next weird category, best Bowen. Bowen?
This is a serious category? Best Bowen statue?
Bowen statue. It's the Medusa. For $175.
I can't wait to see what won the Best Wizard Issue Award.
That is pretty fucking sweet.
That's, there you go.
I don't buy statues. I don't know. There's a pretty sweet
I couldn't tell you what came out
Green
from
Lantern
Bowen.
Battery here.
It gets better.
All right.
Best movie tie-in. The Hot Toys Iron Man Mark III for $160.
Wow. What?
There you go. What else is competing?
What
else is in that class of best movie?
They should have to list three other things so we know like what the.
How about the Iron Man DVD? Is that a movie tie-in? Is that a thing? Yeah. Can I pick that?
Best playability. Nika's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Best playability. Like playing with toys. Actually playing with it.
I guess. Most people don't play with toys any longer. They just collect them. They put them on shelves.
I'm confused.
My nomination for the best Bowen is the Machine Man bust.
The Machine Man is the awesome. Arm goes on. Yeah.
Two arms. Sweet.
I gotta admit, I was looking. Tom can confirm that I was looking at the Green Lantern battery today. If it came with a better ring, I might be going home with it tonight.
I don't want to sell you too much on the Green Lantern power battery, but realize that when you put the ring up to it, it lights up.
Oh, geez, I didn't know that.
I'll throw that in there.
Okay, can you do the oath?
Probably, but I'm not going to do it. All right, best action figures. Mattel's DC Universe Classics.
Okay.
$10 each. I don't know.
These are horrible categories.
I really don't.
No.
Yeah.
You know, I've there's part of me that goes, wow, that's really neat. And I'd like to have it. And I have a few that I have bought.
What would you do with it?
But that's just it. I have a couple, like years ago, I have a couple that I've purchased. Like, I bought the. Well, Chris buys them all the time. He buys.
What do you do?
Did you want to chime in on the playability issue?
I've got three shelves at home.
I've seen your shelves.
I've got a Hellboy shelf that has the great Hellboy figs that came out.
Figures, not in the know.
Whoa! Not Fig Newtons.
Thanks for dropping some science.
there were some great Hellboy series that came out over a couple years, and then I have a Batman shelf that has like all the Elseworlds Batman.
Super geek, dude.
I think every comic fan, like it or not, has the one character that if something comes out, like if there's an Aztec thing that comes out, I have to buy it. Like I don't.
I'm always tempted by Flash.
Aztec the Ultimate Man.
Yeah.
Seriously?
True story. Honest to God, I've got the Justice League Unlimited figure and the Heroclix.
I love the Flash. So I'm always tempted by really sweet Flash figures.
I think the statues, like the Bowens and stuff, that I think they're very cool. I really do, and I look at them all the time. And there's part of me that would sit there and buy all of them.
You've got a villains collection.
I did have kind of a villains. I did start and bought a few. I have a joke. I busted my Joker. I had a really cool Joker that got busted. One of my kids busted it.
Damn it, Jack.
And I have a Bullseye, and then you bought me Terex. Terex. And I have, like, one other one on the camera, what it is. But I haven't bought anything in years. I think they're very cool, but that's the thing. It's like they sit on a shelf, and I don't, you know, it's not like I'm going to do anything with them. And I have, like, a Captain America action figure that I bought that's, like, old, you know, like World War II Ultimates.
Because I just think it's cool looking.
Sure. But...
Actually,
I think they're really, and I look at them all the time when I come in the shops, and I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to buy that. I kind of really would love to have the Green Lantern battery, but
good news can go home with you tonight.
Yes, I know.
Good news.
Well, you
what
know,
do I have since to do I to get be, you to leave with the Green Lantern,
since I will be,
put you in a battery.
Maybe yeah, because you guys do need a new website design. We may be talking about a trade.
You know, I bought one mini bus this year, and it was the to benefit Gene Colan, the who was the guy that
Daredevil?
Was yeah I bought the Daredevil yellow bust from the auction. Who was the guy that was doing the auction? Method.
Cliff Method.
So yeah, I got a Daredevil yellow.
Yeah, I think they're very cool. I think the busts especially there's some fantastic sculptures in there, and they look really cool. And every time I look at them, I mean, if I just had you know anything to do with them, I could you know like. Put them somewhere. I'd probably buy a bunch of them. But.
Yeah.
All right. Best new series of 2008. Invincible Iron Man is the pick from.
I've liked it. I like it despite the art, which I don't really like.
I'll say uneven because that first issue I read, I thought Matt Fraction had lost his mind. It was the first Matt Fraction Marvel book I read that absolutely did not work for me on any level. But by issue three, I actually enjoyed it. And the finish to that Five Nightmares I thought was pretty excellent.
I bought the hardcover from you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not a big Iron Man fan, but I did end up really enjoying it.
I thought it ended in an interesting place, but that first issue is just, it's everything that I wanted Invincible Iron Man to not be. Like, I was so sick of Iron Man Director Shield because I hated that every Iron Man adventure had to include pre-op brief with S.H.I.E.L.D. and S.H.I.E.L.D. voiceover mm-hmm. during it, and then a post-op S.H.I.E.L.D. discussion,
right?
Plus cutaways to S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, you know, wringing their hands over their director's ballsy attitude. Like, and so the fact that Invincible Iron Man number one had all of those things in it was so frustrating, because I just wanted to read Iron Man gets in his Iron Man suit and fights Iron Man villains. Like, that's how, why is that so hard?
Bring on the Iron Man. Where's Ironmonger?
Something.
But then it eventually got there.
It did. It really, it took a while to get there, but it did. And then
I
it was good.
I liked the Spider-Man and Iron Man issue. I thought was, I said this on the show previously, I thought it was a good way to show that Tony Stark wasn't a complete asshole.
Yeah.
That
the,
like,
only comic Marvel published where he wasn't an
asshole. Yeah, where, like, he kind of made Peter Parker look like a dick. By, like, being sort of like, listen, you know, like...
Well, I don't know if you made it look like...
Right, well, he said, yeah, well, I don't have time to worry about secret identities and, like, hiding who I am. And terrorists aren't going to care if they know my name when they blow up, you know, building. I don't have time to mess around with all of that stuff, which I thought he did a pretty good job of not making Iron Man look like a douche.
Again, the one Marvel book series. That. The one they remember that he's maybe doesn't a superhero too.
Did Thor restart this year?
Yeah, Thor.
Thor is a lot of fun.
Thor was very good. I think one of my favorites we talked about already was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
I absolutely love that book.
I'll get on board with that.
Secret Six.
Oh, Secret
just,
Six has
just
been
started.
A hoot.
I mean, in the last couple months.
Yeah, it's been a hoot.
Been four issues, but that's been good.
Trinity.
I haven't read it, so...
I'm almost caught up. I don't know. Okay, where are you now?
I'm up to date. The thing that's frustrating to me about Trinity is that it feels like it's a different book than what they promised me, which was, here's the Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman weekly book, and mm-hmm. I'm on board with that. And the first arc, the first third of it, the first act, mm-hmm. really good. And then the last 7-8 issues have been no Batman, Wonder Woman, or Superman, and I feel like I just read 2 years of that. I just read 2 years of... everybody else in the DCU mm-hmm. except for Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So I want them to come back real soon.
But their fingerprints are all over it. And I think whenever we look back on the series, because I think it's going to wrap up with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, you know, how long they're going to end up with this ultimate, you know, Earth version. But it's a fun ride. It's a fun ride. Yeah. And I'm liking DC's weekly now.
And so. I mean, it's weekly books in general, I think, have the latitude of I can't spend a month worrying about what I didn't like about it.
Yeah.
Because the next issue's already out and I'm reading it, and there you go. So, except for Countdown, which is terrible.
For whatever reason, in this category, they had 11 runners up.
11? So,
yeah.
11 runners up.
Because I'm probably forgetting a lot.
Stephen King's The Stand.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's been very good.
Oh, God. Mike Perkins is drawing the shit out of that book.
I can't disagree. Secret Six.
Shut up, Dal.
I don't know Mike Perkins on anything. I'm sorry. I'm so glad he's not on cap right now. I'm sorry.
I really like Mike Perkins.
But I haven't used the stand, so I don't know.
It's good.
I'm sure.
It's never good. Shopping here again. Secret Six.
That battery, though.
X-Force, which...
I think X-Force is fun. I'll go on. I'll say that. It's action movie dumb fun.
The art to me looks like video game renders.
It's not great art.
Yeah, I don't know. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. House of Mystery.
Oh yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. My only problem with House of Mystery is they
don't leave the house.
Strange. No. Strangely, it's too mysterious. At times, yeah, that's almost it. Like where they haven't. He's strung. And it's kind of weird. I just wish there was a little bit more info. Like, we'd get to a point where we'd know what's kind of going on.
Start with the reveals.
It's the house of mystery.
You know,
it's a mystery.
Yeah, but you're like eight issues in, and you're just kind of like,
what the hell?
You know who I was thinking, you know, because one of the things I love is that it has kind of that mini anthology feel to it, where you have the little middle story in the middle. Who I was thinking would be a great artist. They just had David Peterson did one of the little, you know, mini stories. Nathan Fox.
Nathan Fox is awesome.
Nathan Fox needs to do a little story in House
Nathan
of
Mystery. Nathan Fox is fucking phenomenal. I like
Pigeons from Hell was a really great
I like
miniseries.
The book. I just worry that it's going to be this book.
I got to hang up that page.
I just worry that it's going to be this book where you keep going and you never...
And that's the thing.
You never know.
I enjoy that book, but I always feel like the anthology part I enjoy way more than the framing sequence that's around it. That's essentially the thing you should care about the most. But as soon as someone starts telling their story, I'm sucked in and I love it. And I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back out and it's Fig and it's.
I don't want to act like I don't need to know everything all the time.
Fanboy.
No, but it's like, yeah, but it's like, give us a little, you know, go on to the next part of it. Saying, go on to the next part instead of.
Also, Captain Britain, MI-13.
Yep.
Awesome. Deadpool, very fun.
Oh, yeah. Deadpool. Deadpool's forgot about that.
Very good.
For absolutely fucking hating Secret Invasion, Deadpool was a lot of fun.
Deadpool.
I got to tell you, I've never cared about Deadpool ever in my life. That's a fun story, I just started reading that out of sort of a whim and really, really liked it.
Daniel Way is kind of a hot and cold writer for me, but he's nailing this.
I hated Wolverine Origins with a fiery, fiery passion. I could not understand why the book existed. Every arc was terrible. The Deadpool arc, laughing out loud. It was killing me. Yeah. And then the thing that's so great about that is the Deadpool stuff is the only reason why it was good. And then the last chapter of that arc is Deacon comes back and Deadpool kind of like literally just walks out the door and leaves the book. And then it's like, oh, wait, this is the comic I hate. And it's right there in front of me. And you're making me read this comic to get through the Deadpool arc. And so I'm so glad that he actually launched a Deadpool book where none of those characters can show up and I don't have to hate it. Like, that's awesome.
You mean when you take a character with a mysterious and interesting past and you start to focus on it obsessively, pointing out every moment that it...
And then the secret origin of Wolverine is that he was a douche for like 90 years. That's it. The all
right, great. A grade A-level asshole.
Yeah, to everyone he ever met for 90 years. Like,
he
all
still
right, kind
of
cool.
is, really. I mean, Young Liars, which you guys have talked about. Zorro, which...
Okay.
I'm a huge Zorro fan from way back, and not really have
you
not gotten into the Matt Wagner.
I've heard some good things like, about it. I've heard some people really like it.
I'd rather read Lone Ranger.
Yeah,
Lone Ranger's been awesome.
Has it been awesome?
I said I would rather. Good. Yeah,
Echo.
I've heard a lot. Of
Norton was talking about that last week.
There you go. Is that the Terry Moore?
Fantastic.
Yeah,
and Conan the Cimmerian.
Yeah,
which I haven't read, but I've heard it was pretty good.
It's just Conan being Conan, and it's good, and it's
what is best in life?
To vanquish your foes.
Hear the lamentations of the women.
You drive them before.
Best moments of 2008.
Well, clearly this right here. I mean, I don't want to.
This is one of the best.
We don't want to oversell our bad. Yeah.
us talking to James Robinson.
The first one is Outlaw Fashion Plate, Lone Ranger number 14. It's basically when the Lone Ranger puts on his costume for the first time.
Okay.
It was a very dramatic. I mean, it was because that was the whole setup of Lone Ranger. Lead up first to it. 13 issues was.
Ooh.
Sort of the origin.
He didn't put on the mask.
All right, you're going to have to go with some major spoilers here with that one for our Walking Dead friends.
Whatever.
Let's just skip it.
Giant Size. Do you want to skip this whole section?
No, skip the whatever the Walking Dead. It's too complicated.
Giant Size Astonishing X-Men number 1 when... I don't know what
Joss
happened.
Whedon had characters act like they used to, but they talked like characters from Buffy.
which issue is that? Could you narrow that down some?
Emma Frost and Kitty hate each other, but what the hell? He broke his Stan Lee wristband.
Whoa.
When Kitty sacrifices her life to save the team.
Did you guys really like...
Astonishing X-Men?
I know. I'm going to put myself out.
The first, like... 8 issues of Astonishing X-Men. I really love.
I'm about to get internet garbage thrown at me, but seriously, Joss Whedon.
He's not that good.
Overrated. Dr. Horrible.
Oh, wow, you're actually going to get real garbage thrown at you in real life.
Yeah.
Right? Hey, the best Buffy episodes were not written by Joss Whedon. Sorry to tell you, Buffy fans.
Have you seen The Body? The Body is the absolute best episode of Buffy. He wrote it. He directed it.
That was a good episode.
It's amazing.
I know everyone loves.
I am coming over there.
Wait, who wrote Hush?
Him too.
No, he did not.
I bet he did. I bet he wrote and probably directed it.
No, you're making it up.
Hush was the best episode of Buffy.
Body, like that's the one that still I break up on every time I see it.
You see, Joss Whedon could, as I've said, fart on a snare drum and everyone would be like, I can't believe he reinvented farting on snare drums. Just like it used to be.
He put it on the map. Yeah. He actually did.
Fuck Joss Whedon, I could give a shit.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Of all the fart drummers around, I think he's probably my favorite.
Oh, he made
all
an right. X-Men story that's
Invincible,
readable.
Invincible number
50. Rats.
Invincible number 52. Kid Omni-Man kills another guy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I guess they had just been in the face. Invincible has picked up, I think, in the last 6 months. The last issue was really good with Alan the Alien and the dad.
Oh, I like Alan the Alien.
Hanging out in the prison.
And they're actually like furthering a lot of stuff that they've been percolating for 50-something issues with the Eve and Mark stuff. I think that's going
pretty
someplace.
Pretty good the last couple issues where they've picked up the pace.
I need to start reading that again in monthlies.
Walking Dead 48. shocking and
spoilers.
Unanticipated.
Which, speaking of which, like, I guess
I won't say what it is. I won't spoil it.
I'm going to go all the way back and say probably best single issue of the year I'm going to say was The Walking Dead, where he gets the phone call.
The telephone. Yeah.
That was very good. Yes.
I couldn't believe it. That late in the run, he could still surprise me like that and still make me care about a character in a way that I can really bitch about the phone
thing.
Though. Yeah. Tom and I had some interesting conversations.
My only problem with the phone thing is nowhere else in the series do we ever have an inkling that we are seeing the story through someone else's perception. Like, you never have thought balloons. You never have...
I've always assumed that I was seeing it through his eyes.
But there's parts of the story where Rick isn't in the story, where you see cutaways to other parts of the story.
Yeah,
and that's the only thing that bothers me about it is, like, I felt like this is a really good idea, but I kind of felt like it skirted around... Like,
I mean, he's not the first writer to ever go from you know, single person perspective to omnipresent.
I don't think it's horrible. I just thought it was...
break the reality of the comic, I don't think.
It did a little bit for me.
It bent it a little bit.
It did a little bit for me. It bent it. It bent it a little bit where I was like, why am I seeing... I thought it would be more effective to me if they didn't show the parts where the other person on the other side of the phone is talking. To me, that was the part that really... kind of threw me where I was like, why am I seeing something imaginary for the first time in this book where the whole emphasis of the
everything
book has
else
been
was
everything
it's
you
real.
See
it's
in
real.
The book.
Yeah.
I felt that made a firm stamp on the idea of where we're following this character for the time being. Like that this event that happened in 48 is so important that it's changing the character in a fundamental way.
Well, that's just it. The character has gotten to the point where he's finally...
I'm still reading it.
I just thought one of the byproducts of that
is that I've loved how that has created a connection with Michonne. Is that how you pronounce her name? I love the connection.
Macaroni. This is what I like to call them.
Michonne. I love the connection that had with her kind of insanity that she's dealing with, how that's created a connection between those two.
I was really in that for whatever reason. Yeah. The fact that Rick lost his hand bothered me more so
than that.
Something about like it seemed unnecessary and uninteresting, almost like just sort of gratuitous.
Did you read the letters
column
where he said he kind of regretted having Rick's hand?
No,
cut off?
I didn't. Yeah.
Was hand his favorite character?
He had big plans for the hand.
No, honestly, I didn't read that at all. I don't really generally read
the
letters.
No, the letters columns are great.
Someone asked him if there's anything he regretted, and he said, "I don't know if I would have cut off
for whatever reason." I thought it was true, because I think at some point it's like, okay, this character is to a point where he's going to be limited in whatever he does from now on, and he'll never.
Well, until he gets that Army of Darkness hand.
I don't want to see that, though. That's the thing. But the thing is, where is that character going to go now? I mean, once he's to the point where... I don't know. I guess
maybe he'll just get an imaginary hand.
There you go.
Maybe.
I can't
necessarily explain why it bothered me, but...
When you have to have a serious cliffhanger at the end of every issue, you eventually got to start hacking off limbs.
Someone's got to go. All
right, this one.
I think it's very good.
This last one here is Final Crisis Rogues Revenge number 3.
All
right. The Rogues take out Inertia and leave it.
That wasn't as cool as when they killed other lame duplicates.
That was cool. Yes,
for the first 20 pages.
Oh shit! We got way more pages.
How much longer are we going to record?
We need to wrap up stuff here.
Pick one more.
Wackiest moments of 2008.
Nah.
Takitani fighting another
Tiger Man.
That was awesome.
Tiger Man plus like two Wildcats. Whoa!
It's like,
do we want to quickly go through the list of Final Crisis?
We'll save that for another time when we have nothing planned. Let's not waste all this content.
Thank you, Wizard Magazine.
Thank you, Wizard Magazine, for providing content for this episode.
One more last great moment of 2008.
Yeah? Yeah.
Oh,
he's not that great to me.
Nothing left.
You know what?
Angel's Secret Revealed in Angel After the Fall number 3. Anybody reading that?
No, it's the first 5 or 6 issues of that, not to be a big Buffy Angel fan or anything, but those are phenomenal. They're really good. For Angel fans, sure.
Phenomenal.
What can I say?
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Good lord.
Capital PH phenomenal.
Thunderbolts 120, Norman Osborn back as a Green Goblin. Deadpool number 2.
Deadpool number four
is pretty sweet.
One of my favorite comic book moments was the reveal of who Rex Hunter is.
When did they do that?
In Booster Gold.
Oh, no. Is he Booster Gold?
Really? The last Jeff Johns issue.
Booster
Gold's son.
Spoilers.
Oh, okay. No.
For a book that came out like 5 months ago.
Yeah. Get over it, people.
I thought that was awesome.
Read it. I didn't know.
Well, now you know.
I thought he was just Booster Gold, in like old Booster Gold. Does that make sense, Booster Sun?
He's actually Tim Hunter. It's the whole Vertigo crossover that's
Steve
coming
Hunter.
Up. I don't want to spoil it.
It's Stevie Hunter from New Mutants.
All right, guys.
Bam.
I tell you, that's our kind of impromptu best of 2000.
Whatever.
You know what?
We're not doing a Christmas episode either this year. We're redoing the Christmas special.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We gotta record a.
We just put that out
just
again.
Just put the Christmas special out again. It was good enough to hear
fucking,
twice.
We've seen Frost. It's not like they redo Frosty the Snowman.
You know how much fucking work I put into that episode?
We haven't put it out again. All right, these are gonna be the quickest announcements ever. Here I go.
Let me do it. Let me do it. I'll do it faster and better.
Wow.
Better?
Whoa.
Yeah, better.
You crossed the line,
it's
man.
True. I can't help it.
Wow. This
is email us, contact the show at info@aroundcomics.com. Hero Initiative, we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. Thanks for leaving iTunes reviews, Punisher Chad, Phantom X, 04 and Beta Ray Ryan. Voicemails, you can leave us a voicemail at, I don't have the number. Don't forget to drop by the forum at aroundcomics.com. And you can hear Tom on Tom versus the Flash, Chris on 11 o'clock comics, and he writes stuff at ifanboy.com, and me nowhere. And that's it. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. Thanks for Mark at Dark Tower for hosting us. Not this week. Thanks for Dal at Challengers for hosting us. And that's it.
Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. Thank you for Wizard Magazine.
Thank you, Wizard.
Seriously, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Have more signings here, and we would love to come back if you would have us. All right, awesome.
Otherwise, we're not coming back.
We would like Alan Moore.
Alan Moore.
I'll get on that. Okay. I'll make some phone calls. I think Jack Kirby's coming in next week.
Oh, sweet.
It's going to be pretty awesome.
Ghost of Jack
Kirby. Ghost of Jack Kirby's coming.
Nice. All right, seriously, thank you so much for hosting us.
Thanks for coming.
Guys, yes. It's been a really fun evening. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode.
Jesus.
I think we've got Elliot Serrano from The Red Eye and Geek to Me, and Tom Stillwell from Spinner Rack Comics and Unscrewed. So nice. come back then for more Around Comics goodness. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
Around Comics.
Around Comics.
Faster, better, stronger.
It's like speed dating.
More masculine.
More digital.
Yeah, digital. Harder. Living right is easy. What goes wrong, you're causing it. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008. Side.
Living right is easy. What goes wrong, you're causing it. The drive. Didn't want to turn that way, you're causing it. The drive. Doesn't make a difference now, you're causing it. The drive. Silence knows, can't drown. Sorted.